I look at what's going on politically and morally in this country today, and I have to conclude, when you look at this whole liberal ideology and you look at all these liberal people who are spouting off their notions one way or the other, the main thing I'd have to say about them is they seem to absolutely lack common sense. There's no common sense there in facing the reality of the world. So my sermon today is going to be, what is the reality of the world today? What is the reality? Not what you might want it to be emotionally, or what you might think it ought to be, or somehow have some kind of a hopes and dreams it's going to be what you want it to be. It is not going to work that way. And we're going to see very clearly what the scriptures say and what various news items are telling us about what's going on. First of all, let's notice 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse number 1. Here's the first thing we want to emphasize. Know this, that in the last days... Now, if these are not the last days, I don't know what you'd call them, because there are many, many signs of what's taking place in the world. Now, when I say last days, I don't have any idea how long things are going to go, and neither does anybody else, although you'll find people who seem to think they know everything. But anyway, in the last days, perilous times shall come. Now, why are we in such perilous times? Well, we'll address some of those things today as we proceed. But we find a similar statement here back in the book of Daniel. Let's go to Daniel chapter 12. Most of you are familiar with these texts here anyway. But Daniel 12 and verse number 1, we read, "At the time that Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people, there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that time." So we might think of the Holocaust that occurred back in World War II was the worst time, or the slaughter of millions of Russians by the Russian dictator over there, Stalin and his cohorts, and by the millions who were slaughtered and killed in China, and the millions who were killed in Cambodia. We may think those things are bad, but they're going to be nothing compared to this. This is going to be the worst time ever. And then finally, in Deuteronomy 31, verse number 29, here's what we read now. This is a prophecy that Moses gave here. And it says here in verse number 29, "I know that after my death you will become utterly corrupt and turn aside from the way which I have commanded you." Now that happens some generations after the time of Israel. Notice the context here, however. "And evil will befall you in the latter days." Evil will befall you. "Because you will do evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger through the work of your hands." So if you have to say that evil is not befalling us today, you are living in a dream world and you're not living in the real world. Now, what am I talking about? Well, I'd say one of the factors, and we've never seen this to this extent, any of us has never occurred this badly on the scale that it has, that is taking place today, and that is the rise of radicalism. Radicalism. I mean, where people, they absolutely have no common self-control or common sense about what is appropriate, what is decent, and what is right. So you read here in 2 Timothy 3, and this time I'm going to read verse number 3. I read verse 1 to start off with, which indicates it is the last times, there will be perilous times. But notice verse number 3. They're going to be unloving, unforgiving, slanderous, without self-control, brutal. How many beheadings do we hear of a certain class of people going on today? Some ancient practice, you know, that no civilized people have practiced for generations, and now these people are just doing it every time they get a chance. You bet. As we read here, they are without self-control, and they're brutal. Now, among these, and probably one of the ones that we need to be certainly concerned about, and that is wars and rumors of wars. Notice Matthew 24, verse number 6. Matthew 24 and verse number 6. "You will hear of wars and rumors of wars." Now, I've looked it up before, but I lost a particular note on it, so I can't remember the exact number of years that the world has been at peace in the last 2,000 years. And it'll just floor you. I mean, the amount of time is so small compared to the number of years. I think right now there's just dozens and dozens of wars going on in different parts of the world. We don't hear about them because a lot of them are minor. But there's slaughter going down in Africa like you can't believe, or North Africa. And you're hearing of those, and then you're going to hear rumors of wars. How often are we hearing of rumors of war nowadays? You turn on the radio, and what do you hear? Turn on the TV, and what do you hear? Uh-oh, Iran is making threats against the Jews. They're making threats against us. They're making threats against Europe. And there just is this constant dialogue going on of antagonism and threats of wars. Now, it's a whole lot more dangerous than what people realize, and I'm going to give you a few more scriptures before I give you some actual news items that will back that up. Let's notice Jeremiah 4. Here's what we're seeing take place. People are really worried about this. And as you read in Jeremiah 4 and verse number 19, "Oh, my soul, I am pained in my very heart. My heart makes a noise in me. I cannot hold my peace because you have heard, O my soul, the sound of the trumpet, the alarm of war." Now, we have threats going back and forth, don't we? And so we see this is certainly a factor. And at the very time of the end, when Christ returns, what condition is the world going to be in with respect to war? Read it in Revelation 11, verse number 18. Revelation 11, verse number 18. "The nations were angry." They're angry. "And your wrath has come." Right at the very end, the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that you should reward your servants, the prophets, and all the saints, and those who fear your name, small and great, and should destroy those that destroy the earth. We're living in a time period right now where some scientists say it took God 6 days to create the earth, and man can destroy it now in an hour. That's the scope of the damage that's available through atomic warfare and neutron bombs and all this kind of thing. And just as I said earlier, as Daniel said, this is a time of trouble such as has never been before. Now let's notice here. This, I'm talking about this radicalism. Here's a typical example of it. Responding to the publishing, and this is from World Net Daily. I didn't write down the source where the particular work is taken from, but some of these you'll hear on the regular news. Responding to the publishing of cartoons depicting Islam's prophet Muhammad, a video posted on the internet by an Al-Qaeda member called on Muslims to attack Denmark, France, and Norway. "Muslims, avenge your prophet," said Libyan Muhammad Hussein, who escaped from U.S. custody in Afghanistan last July. He says, "We deeply desire that the small state of Denmark, Norway, and France are struck hard and destroyed," he said. "Destroying their buildings, make their ground shake, transform them into a sea of blood," said Hussein, who's also known as Sheikh Abu Yahya al-Laiba. Now, that's just a typical example. Now, if you only had just one person that made that remark, you wouldn't be concerned. But to what degree is Al-Qaeda now infiltrated all around the world? They're now in Palestine, and you know they're all in throughout Asia and those Muslim groups here, and it's even suspected their cells in the United States. Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden, in his most recent audio communique, called on a global Muslim boycott of American goods, similar to a recent boycott of Danish goods, and he also said the artists who drew the offending cartoons should be handed over to him for trial and punishment. And a dozen young terrorists have departed Afghanistan, bound first for Iran and then Europe, where their mission will be to hunt down the Danish cartoonists. Now, can you imagine any other group of people on the face of the earth doing something like that? I mean, these people are absolutely mad. And they are indeed, so radical, it's unbelievable. Now, here's another one. Here's a comment from Ahmadinejad, president of Iran. He lashed out at Israel on Friday, saying it was heading toward annihilation, just after Tehran raised fears about its nuclear activities by saying it successfully enriched uranium for the first time. He called Israel a permanent threat to the Middle East that will soon be liberated. And he appeared to again question whether the Holocaust really happened. Well, I can tell you, you can ask a lot of those soldiers who were over there in Europe and went through those death camps whether there was a Holocaust or not. They had films, and right after the war was over, they showed them all the United States piles and piles of dead bodies all over Germany and Europe where these Nazis had done this to these people. Now, it wasn't only Jews. The Jews were included in it. There were Slavs and Gypsies anybody who's a political dissenter, homosexuals, there are just all kinds of people caught up in this. Like it or not, the Zionist regime is heading toward annihilation, he said. The Zionist regime is rotten, is a rotten, dried tree that will be eliminated by one storm. And the land of Palestine will be freed soon. So that's this kind of a ranting that's going on. And what kind of position do you think that would put the Jews in? What would you think if you were a Jew now and you heard that? And then finally here, he said they'll give money to the Palestinian Authority to make up for the withdrawal of donations by Western nations who object to Hamas's refusal to recognize Israel and renounce violence. And the chief of Israeli military intelligence, Major General Amos Yadlin, was quoted as saying, Iran could develop a nuclear bomb within 3 years by the end of the decade. See, now this is 06, isn't it? Now, here's another example. Here's another radical example in wars and rumors of wars. This is from a leading Palestinian, number two Hamas terrorist. He said, the United States' churches are secretly run by Jews who converted to Christianity with the intention of controlling religious Americans, including President Bush. Even the churches where the Americans pray are led by Jews who were converted to Christianity. But they were converted to keep controlling the Americans. I made a study, and I know very well that all this radicalism in some parts of Christianity, including the Anglicans, who are being tied to Bush, is because of the control of Zionists, said Abu Tir. Abu Tir was elected to the number two spot in the PA in January's ballots, and he won by a large margin. He spent 25 years in Israeli prisons for directing terrorist activities, including the attempted poisoning in the early 1990s of Israel's water supply. So don't think that those kind of things aren't crossing their minds. Here's the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. They've been accused of leading the persecution of Bethlehem's local Christian population, which drastically declined after the PA took control of the city in 1995. So what's happening is that the Christian, there's a lot of Arabs over there who are Christians, and they're leaving that whole area because it isn't safe for them anymore. This is what happens when this radicalism gets control of things. Now, I said wars and rumors of wars. Wiping Israel off the map is just one step in Iran's attempt to create a new world order, said Brigadier General Yosef Kupenwasser, head of the IDF, that is Israeli Defense Force Military Intelligence Research Division. Iran is interested not only in turning into a superpower, but also changing the world order. Now, have you heard this? I certainly have. Their aim and goal eventually is to remove everything off the face of the earth except put the Muslim religion and force everybody into adopting the Muslim religion. Iran is at the forefront of global terrorism, and this includes Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, Palestinian terror organizations, and is behind the attack on U.S. armed forces in Iraq. Earlier today, Gilad, this is another one of the Israeli speakers, told Army Radio that Israel should place itself at the forefront of the Iran conflict as a crisis over the country's nuclear program was international. I'll get to another thing here in a moment, and that is the Middle East is a virtual powder keg right now. And we'll see some of the scriptures that have to do with that. Now, here's a comment from this Ahmadinejad. You heard about the letter he sent to President Bush. He suggested Bush return to Christian teachings. Now, let me ask you a question. Has the United States ever really been Christian? Let's not kid ourselves. It's been Christian in name only, but it's never practiced Christianity, certainly not what Christ taught. And so, how can they return to something they never had even to begin with, although there was a great acknowledgement of God and certainly looking up to him with the idea that he should be respected? But how many people really understood the truth of God's law? How many have ever stood it down the ages, and how many of our leaders ever have? So he says, we read here, he says, can one be a follower of Jesus Christ, a great messenger of God, but at the same time have countries attacked, the lives, reputations, and possessions of people destroyed? Well, now, who started this thing? This is like the kettle calling the pot black. You look at that Muslim religion, and they feel justified in any killings they do. That's a part of their religion. Now, here's another example. This is what's going on. Foreign ministers of major powers failed to come up with a joint strategy for dealing with Iran after Tehran sought to influence the negotiations with a stunning last-minute diplomatic maneuver. A senior U.S. official who spoke on condition of anonymity said the meeting agreed that Iran must pay a price for not complying with the UN. It said that, but did not come to terms on the form of what it should take. So now you have all of these so-called United Nations, and what are they doing? They're bickering and arguing because they can't come to agreement on how they should deal with Iran. And who are the big holdbacks? China and Russia. Now, is there going to be a solution to that problem? See, they've got vested interests in all this. It's just like what happened in the Iraq War. You had the same, you had France, Russia, and Germany, and I'm not talking about the literal governments, but I'm talking, well, even in France, it was a government, and even in Russia, not so much in Germany, but there were very, very influential business interests in those countries who influenced the government, who were getting kickbacks all the time from Saddam Hussein. And they just reneged on even doing anything because it was going to hurt their pockets. So what do we read here? Earlier on Monday, China made it clear that any reference to possible sanctions or war should be eliminated from the UN resolution ordering Tehran to curb its nuclear program. No war mentioned. Now, how are you going to solve that problem if they're not going to cooperate? Now, we'd all hate to see a war happen. But, you know, you wonder what's going to happen if nothing is done. And how much longer is this going to go on? And what's the end result going to be? Well, I tell you what the end result's going to be. We're going to find that in Zechariah 14. Now, here's another example of what's going on. You've been reading about these missiles over there in Iran. Now they supposedly have the capability to send missiles into Europe. And if they get nuclear warheads, Europe is going to be right under the threat all the time. Now, look what the United States is coming up with. It may sound like science fiction, but the prospect that suicide bombers and hijackers could be made redundant by flying robots is a real one, according to the experts. Remote controlled light aircraft, now highly advanced and widely available, are virtually unstoppable. And thanks to the satellite positioning systems, they can now be programmed to hit targets some distance away within just a few meters of pinpoint accuracy. Models with a wingspan of 16 feet, capable of carrying up to 50 kilograms, 110 pounds, remain undetectable by radar. Now, what if you programmed to hit a target and you got 50 kilograms or 110 pounds of C4? That very, very highly explosive compound. You talk about destruction, it can be done. According to one of the main speakers here, ultralight aircraft, powered hand gliders, or powered paragliders have also been purchased by terrorist groups to circumvent ground-based countermeasures. So the terrorists have them now. Now, what do you think is going to happen if they start sending them into Israel? What happens if they got some over here in this country? Armed militant groups have already tried to use unmanned aircraft, according to a number of studies by institutions, including the Center for Nonproliferation Studies in Monterey, California. And in August 2002, the Colombian military reported finding 9 small remote control planes at its base had been taken by the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia. FARC. So FARC has stolen a number of those things right now down there. In April 2005, the Lebanese Shiite group militia Hezbollah flew a pilotless drone over Israel territory in what it called a surveillance mission. And the military confirmed this and responded by flying warplanes over southern Lebanon. A Japanese company, Yamaha, has produced a 209-pound robot helicopter that's 11.8 feet long. It flies close to the ground at about 12 miles an hour. Nothing but an incredible stroke of luck could stop it if it suddenly appeared in the sky above the White House. This is a real world. We're not talking about people who cannot look reality in the face. Because we're going to see things like that in the future. Otherwise, the Bible, you can't believe anything it says. Now, let's notice. The Middle East is a literal powder keg. And here's what we read in Luke 21. And this gives you an example. There are other scriptures, but this one certainly shows you what is going to develop here eventually. How soon? We can't tell. But what is it that's going to bring all nations against Jerusalem? What kind of a world crisis is going to set this off? Because here's what it says, Luke 21, verse 20. When you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, then know that its desolation is near. What's going to bring this about? Now, a lot of people don't seem to realize this, but Jerusalem itself as a city has been torn down and absolutely destroyed 7 or 8 different times. And so this will be another occasion here. So we're going to see, I don't know to what degree it's going to be destroyed, but it's certainly going to be climaxing in this development of what's going to happen in the Middle East and around Jerusalem itself. Some people seem to think that the safest place to go is Jerusalem. Because it says in the Bible, if you're in Jerusalem, flee to the mountains. So all the Christians, therefore, are in Jerusalem, and they're going to flee to the mountains. I tell you, that's the last place in the world I want to be. And I think anybody that has any sense would recognize the same thing. Joel chapter 3. Joel chapter 3. And verses 1 and 2. Behold, in those days and at that time, when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem, and they have a lot of people today, the Jews in particular, seem to think that their presence down in the Holy Land now is a fulfillment of all those prophecies of the establishment of the Messianic reign. Not true. That isn't going to happen until Christ returns. But this is what is down there is a fulfillment of this. And the fact that it tells very plainly, the men of Judah will fight in that day, so they're going to be there. And here's what it says. I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, and I will enter into judgment with them there. And a lot of commentators and historians seem to think that this refers to Megiddo, and it seems to be referring to a great plain at the environs of Jerusalem, but that remains to be seen. And then in verse number 14, we read, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of the Lord's near in the valley of decision. And then you see the time setting. The sun and moon will grow dark, the stars will diminish in their brightness. The Lord will also roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. The heavens and the earth will shake. So we see this developing here. Now, how soon is it going to happen? I don't know. Neither does anybody else. Contrary to what they might think they're going to tell you. And then in Zechariah chapter 14, here's the summary of it. Zechariah chapter 14 and verses number 1 through 3. Behold, the day of the Lord is coming, and your spoil will be divided in your midst. For I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. Is this going to be a struggle and a battle against the Jews? Or is this going to be a struggle and a battle against the Arabs? What does it mean? What is going to take place here? The city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished. That always seems to go hand in hand with war. A lot of people don't realize this, but when Russia took over Germany in World War II, they raped at least 100,000 women in Germany. That's what these Russians were like over there. And their generals didn't make any attempt to stop them. Half the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. That is, they'll not be removed from the city. So apparently half of the city is going to fall. And I think that's very interesting when you realize right now, what is the big proposition that the Jews are coming up with? To build this big defensive wall and divide the city in half. That's significant. And they're claiming to have this done before too long. So you see something quite significant here. Now, right in conjunction with that, how real is this thing of nuclear war? It's only been a miracle. We haven't had it already. There was a base down in the southeast, I forget what state it was in, and the officers were all sitting in the mess hall, and all of a sudden, one of their missiles all of a sudden moved itself in position and got ready to loose. And they hadn't received any order. They have a whole series of checks to stop any kind of mistake. And one officer saw that, and he rushed out there, and he started yanking and tearing cords off of the thing so the system wouldn't work. And you know what they found out later? Squirrels had eaten through the wire and caused a short, and it was ready to take off. That's how close we've come in times past. So you need to realize it's a whole lot more dangerous than what people think. Now let's notice Leviticus 26. This is the time we're living in today. We're not only looking at nuclear war, I can tell you that for sure, we're looking at other forms of destruction, just like 9-1-1. Now let's notice what we read here in Leviticus 26 and verse 36. As for those of you who are left, I'll send faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies. And now notice here, the sound of a shaken leaf shall cause them to flee. And they shall flee as though fleeing from the sword, and they shall fall when no one pursues. What kind of condition do we have in the United States today? Oh, you have all these liberals, you know, who don't even live in the real world, and the government just going wild in trying to protect us, and they're violating citizens' rights, blah, blah, blah. How many times have we heard that? Well, I can tell you one thing. I'd rather have them to take the steps necessary to protect us than to sit around and think it isn't going to happen. What do we read in Matthew 24, verse 21? Matthew 24, verse number 21. For then there will be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world unto this time, no, nor ever shall be. That's on the scene in the future. This is the real world. And then in Daniel 12, we already read, a time of trouble such as never been before. And then here's one scripture that I've always been struck by, and I'm going to read a text to illustrate this point. I'm going to read a comment here that I think is very interesting. This was a comment made by Pat Buchanan, and it certainly speaks the truth. Let's go to Micah chapter 5, and beginning here in verse number 8. Micah 5 and verse 8. Beginning in verse 7, the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many peoples. Jacob meaning the descendants of Israel. Like dew from the Lord, like showers on the grass that tarry for no man nor wait for the sons of men. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many peoples, like a lion among the beasts of the forest, like a young lion among the flocks of sheep, who if he passes through, both treads down and tears to pieces, and none can deliver. Your hand shall be lifted up against your adversaries, and all your enemies shall be cut off. Now, notice what Pat Buchanan says here. In the 27 years since the Iranian Revolution, which remembered happened during the Carter administration, the United States has launched airstrikes on Libya, invaded Grenada, put Marines in Lebanon, run airstrikes in the Bekaa Valley and the Chouf Mountains in the retaliation for the Beirut bombing. We invaded Panama, launched Desert Storm to liberate Kuwait, put troops in Somalia. Under Clinton, we occupied Haiti, fired cruise missiles into Sudan, intervened in Bosnia, conducting bombing strikes on Iraq, and launched a 78-day bombing campaign against Serbia, a nation that never attacked us, and we put troops in Kosovo. And after the Soviet Union stood down in Eastern Europe, we moved NATO into Poland and the Baltic states and established U.S. bases in former provinces of Russia's Central Asia. And under Bush, we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, although it appears Saddam had neither weapons of mass destruction nor played a role in 9-1-1, and that's questionable, of course. Yet at this same quarter century, when the U.S. military has been so busy it is said to be overstretched and exhausted, Iran has not invaded one neighbor or fought one war. An eight-year war with Iraq where she was a victim of aggression, and in that war of aggression against Iran, we supported the aggressor. That's the United States record. Well, what you find, of course, is that these alliances just shift constantly depending on which way the wind's blowing at the time. But that's a good example. Now, I wanted to read here, verse 10 of Micah 5. It shall be in that day, says the Lord, that I will cut off your horses from your midst and destroy your chariots, and I will cut off the cities of your land, and I'll throw down your strongholds. Is that talking about the future here? This is a time period when we are like a lion going through the world. I'll cut off your sorceries from your hand, and you shall have no more soothsayers. Your carved images I'll cut off, and your sacred pillars, and you shall no more do the work of your hands, and I'll pluck your wooden images from your midst. Thus I will destroy your cities, and I will execute vengeance and anger and fury of the nations that have not heard. This scripture, I tell you, Rita, has troubled me. Because if it's talking about our time today, or in the future here, however far ahead it may be, it does not portend good. Now listen to this. MI6. Now MI6 is British intelligence. MI6, Britain's secret intelligence service, has identified six Pakistani scientists working in Iran's nuclear bomb program who have been advising Al-Qaeda on how to weaponize fissionable materials it has now obtained. MI6 and the International Atomic Energy Agency believe the scientists have played a major role in enabling Iran to be well advanced in providing uranium-enriched materials for nuclear bombs. MI6 report to other intelligence services followed bin Laden's recent threats to unleash a new wave of terror, with Britain and the United States as his prime targets. Recently, from his lair in North Pakistan, bin Laden boasted that Al-Qaeda did not find it difficult to obtain the weapons-grade material. We have contacts in Russia with other militant groups, and enough material to make a tactical nuke is available for 15 million pounds. Bin Laden's material is hidden somewhere in the mountain fastness between Iran and Afghanistan. And in his statement, and here's another one of their speakers, Mullah Omar, high-ranking Al-Qaeda leader, he said, they have asked me to devise a radiological bomb. It would be constructed from nuclear materials wrapped in conventional high explosives, which bin Laden has obtained from a nuclear storage site in Uzbekistan. And depending on the quality of the fissionable material bin Laden has obtained, combined scientific skills would be able to create a weapon considerably more than a dirty bomb. So they are, and I wouldn't doubt MI6 at all. I would have no reason to doubt that. Now here's another example. Paul Williams, author of The Dunces of Doomsday, 10 Blunders That Gave Rise to Radical Islam, a former FBI consultant and author of The Al-Qaeda Connection and Osama's Revenge, uncovers a booming nuclear black market in which bin Laden has been strategically complicit. With its origins, the Soviet Union's voluntary withdrawal of 22,000 nuclear weapons in the early 1990s, the nuke market has grown into an international trade characterized by a dizzying and disconnecting bevy of untracked, lost, and stolen weapons. Where are they? In the first 3 years after the collapse of the Soviet Union, some Russians, desperate for survival amid resultant unemployment and widespread malnutrition, turned to the temptations of the looming nukes for financial support and sustenance. Consider these facts. And these went into Egypt, Iran, North Korea, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and Al-Qaeda. These tracked sales do not take into account the many devices that seeped into the underground unchecked. Consider these facts. Number one, bin Laden has been amassing a nuclear arsenal since 1992, and his purchases have included at least 20 suitcase bombs from the Chechen rebels, 48 suitcase nukes from the Russian mafia, and more than 20 kilos of uranium-236, several bars of enriched uranium, and 20 nuclear warheads. He's worked with scientists and technicians to create a hard-to-detect suitcase and backpack bombs. And these purchases have been supported by bin Laden's massive global opium enterprise. Even a small amount of radioactive material can have devastating effects. A single gram of cesium, if inhaled or ingested, is a bone sucker, writes Williams. It causes hair loss, diarrhea, bleeding, delirium, high fever, purple fingernails, and imminent death, various cancers, and long-term environmental contamination. Now consider that bin Laden has amassed enough radioactive material to plant a dirty bomb nuke in every major American city. The U.S. government played down radioactive deals that became common knowledge in the international community. For years, Al-Qaeda operatives have been at the helm of combing the world for loose nukes that have flowed from Russia, Germany, Sudan, Libya, Pakistan, and Iran, too. And the Al-Qaeda nuclear arsenal is not a matter of speculation, but of substantial fact. The situation is dire, says Williams. Now, how many people know these things? So it gives you an example of what we're talking about. It's a whole lot more dangerous than what people realize. There is a nuclear reality. And just as I pointed out here, we're living in a time period right now where the shaking of a leaf frightens people. How many times have we had these levels raised up to high because they're afraid of some infiltration? Well, let's just take a look at illegal immigration here and we'll see where that fits in. We know that illegal immigration is the number one hot button issue in America today. And I don't know what's wrong with these cowardly politicians. It's the most pathetic thing I ever. They're both do-nothing parties. And if, I can tell you, if Bush does not do something, and if something isn't done to curtail this thing, it's going to be a death knell for the Republicans. And the problem with the Republicans has always been, they have an uncanny knack to knock the Democrats off the chair. But once they get in power, they're like a bunch of wimps. They don't want to offend anybody. I guess they stand around and pat each other on the back and tell how good and kind diplomats they are. They're not in the real world themselves either. And when you find politicians whose primary interest is in making a future for themselves instead of the people, what do you expect? This is the sickest thing we ever saw happen in this country. Law just being broken all over the place. Nobody pays a bit of attention to it. Now let's notice here. Here's what God says in the book of Hosea about his people. Hosea chapter 7 and verse number 8. Ephraim, and that's often a name used in referring to the 10 tribes, since that was the central main tribe of the 10 tribes. Ephraim has mixed himself among the peoples. How many Gentile peoples do we find in our land today? Ephraim is a cake unturned, and aliens have devoured his strength, but he does not know it. Now we saw, I read you the results here, I think last Sabbath or so, how many billions and billions of dollars have been spent on these illegal aliens. Whole hospitals, dozens of them have just gone and had to close because they have to give all this service to these illegal aliens. They all get on the welfare rolls and they get food stamps. They're all here, not all of them, but a good percentage of them are here illegally. Nothing's done about it. Yeah, he's mixed himself, and he doesn't even realize what's happening to his own strength and power. And in Isaiah 62, verse 8, Isaiah 62 and verse 8, the Lord has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no longer give your grain as food to your enemies, and the sons of the foreigners shall not drink your new wine. Now, what's that imply? The strangers and the foreigners have been doing this very thing, eating your grain and drinking your wine. That's what's going on today. So we see very plainly. Now, what's the scripture really say is in store for people who disregard God and don't pay any attention to Him? You know, we profess Christianity in name only, and you have all these people making a big fuss about removing God from the public square, which is well and good. But how many people really obey God and what He says anyway? They like to make a pretense that they're Christians and they say they worship God, but do they obey God? Here's what we read in Deuteronomy 28, verse number 43. The alien who is among you shall rise higher and higher above you, and you shall come down lower and lower. And he shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him, and he shall be the head, and you shall be the tail. This is being done by the very people that are running this country. It's just like a bunch of madmen that don't know whether they're coming or going. Isaiah 13, verse number 14. This is one scripture here that I take great rest in reading here, because this is what's eventually going to happen. It is not going to happen probably until Christ returns, but here's what it says. Every man will turn to his own people, and everyone will flee to his own land. And I don't believe God is going to allow all these racial mixtures going on when he sets up his government, his kingdom, because they were to be separate in the first place. We're in Babylon today, aren't we? Now, what am I talking about? All right, let's notice. As Congress grapples with the question of how to design a guest worker program for millions of illegal immigrants in the United States, a study shows that the number of illegal immigrants working is rising and far more American-born workers are becoming unemployed. Why, they're doing the work that Americans aren't willing to do. Baloney. Based on government labor statistics, over the last 5 years, a report by the Center for Immigration Studies, which favors less immigration, found that employment of illegal immigrants with a high school diploma or less has grown as employment of Americans with the same credentials has dropped. Steve Camerato, author of the report, said illegal immigrants are gaining jobs in the competitive, low-skilled labor market that Americans aren't, and the people who are taking on the chin are at the bottom. Immigrant rights groups say blaming immigrants for the higher unemployment rate among American-born workers is simplistic and unfair. Well, now, if you're some greedy businessman and you want to make a buck and you're going to hire somebody for $8 an hour or $15 an hour, who are you going to take? You all know the answer to that. According to the report, states such as California, Maryland, Georgia, North Carolina, and Tennessee have received the largest influx of immigrant workers over the last 5 years, while at the same time charting the largest increase in the unemployment rates of American-born workers. And a lot of those folks, of course, are black folks. I read to you the example of what happened over there in Katrina when a number of black workers went over there to work, and they were told they weren't needed because they'd hired Hispanics to take their place. Georgia's working immigrant population doubled between 2000 and 2005, while the number of Americans working dropped by 5%, or 103,000 workers. And Camerata said, a guest worker program would only make unemployment worse for American-born workers. Nice, happy world we live in today, isn't it? This is a real world. Now, you've all heard this fuss going on about the Border Patrol tipping off the Mexican authorities where the Minutemen are located. And, of course, they're trying to deny they did it. But the author who had written the actual report had read the websites from the Mexican government, the Mexican side, where they listed where all they were. How'd they get them? According to the three documents on the Mexican Secretary of Foreign Relations website, the U.S. Border Patrol is to notify the Mexican government as to the location of Minutemen and other civilian Border Patrol groups when they participate in apprehending illegal immigrants. U.S. Customs and Border Protection spokesman confirmed the notification process, describing it as a standard procedure meant to reassure the Mexican government that migrants' rights are being observed. What rights? What rights do they have in this country when they're illegal immigrants? Minutemen members were not so sanguine about the arrangement, however, saying that reporting their location to Mexican officials nullifies their effectiveness along the border and could endanger their lives. Now we know why it seemed the Mexican officials knew where we were all the time, said Chris Simcox, founder of the Minutemen Civil Defense Corps. It's unbelievable that our own government's agency is sending intelligence to another country. They are sending intelligence to a nation where corruption runs rampant, and that could be getting into the hands of criminal cartels. Well, I can tell you, the government always has a neat answer to answer this whenever an accusation is made. They make a plausible denial. The very moment they make a plausible denial, what do people think? Well, it immediately removes the idea that, well, maybe what I was told here is true. It's a tactic that's been going on for years. T.J. Bonner, president of the National Border Patrol Council, a union representing more than 10,000 Border Patrol agents, said agents have complained for years about the Mexicans' consulate influence over the agency. It worries me that the Mexican government seems to be unduly influencing our enforcement policies. Why is this kind of thing going on? Well, I've explained why before, because it involves a benefit to both political parties. Now, listen to this. Nearly half of all the nation's children under five are racial or ethnic minorities, and the percentage is increasing mainly because the Hispanic population is growing so rapidly. Hispanics are the nation's largest and fastest-growing minority group. They accounted for 49% of the country's growth from 2004 to 2005, and the increase in young children is largely a Hispanic story, driving 70% of the growth in children younger than five, and 45% of U.S. children younger than five are minorities. One in three Americans is now a member of a minority group. What's going to happen 20 years from now? Large swaths of the upper Midwest are still mainly non-Hispanic white, but minorities are a majority of children younger than five in the Washington area, according to previously released census numbers, and this is also true, and I presume it must be Washington, D.C. This is also true in Miami, Houston, Los Angeles, and other high immigration regions. William Fried of the Brookings Institute predicted that the United States will have a multicultural population that will probably grow more tolerant, accommodating to other races, and more able to succeed in the global economy. Yeah, that's what they're after. What they want to develop is a universal brown man to destroy the white race. That's their goal. It isn't going to happen, though, because God's going to intervene before that takes place. The Centers for Child and Family Network also operate a preschool in Arlington. This is what is given to these people. Provide free and subsidized preschools for about 200 children of low-income families. They serve many immigrants, including those who don't qualify for other programs, and the waiting list is 150 children long. 8 out of 10 speak English as a second language, and 70% are Latino. 8 out of 10 speak English as a second language. Cruz says, and this is one of the speakers there, she has seen a huge difference in children's abilities from when they start the program to when they move on to kindergarten. She pointed out a 5-year-old girl from Mexico who was prattling about butterflies in English. Last year, Cruz said she came with a 0 in English. A 0. Now, have you heard of what's happened in California here recently? They had a test where they were requiring all students to be able to pass it. And you know what the passing score had to be? 50. And they were allowed to take it 5 times and still flunked it because they haven't learned English. They're trying to push this Spanish language on everybody. Now, let's go back to bin Laden here, south of the border. Britain's Secret Intelligence Service, MI6, has established the first proof Al-Qaeda is playing a major role in the new Cold War between North and South America, with Osama bin Laden's terror network seeing itself in league with Mexican subversives in infiltrating the U.S. border. Details of Al-Qaeda's penetration into Latin America emerged from documents discovered during a recent anti-terrorist operation in Pakistan. The documents included evidence that Al-Qaeda had established links with the Colombian terror group FARC, heard about them a little bit ago, didn't we, and Shining Path, in Peru, that is SL, and they also reveal Al-Qaeda's links with thousands of Muslim students in the Dominican Republic. Another Pakistani document showed the links between Al-Qaeda and Mexico's Popular Revolutionary Army, EPR, and the documents reveal that Al-Qaeda sees EPR as collaborators in attacks in Mexico on foreign targets. Now, where do you think those foreign targets would be? We can't put the military on the border. Well, that's a job for the law enforcement. Well, I can tell you, law enforcement is so lacking and so nil, the whole thing fell flat on its face. Foreign targets, especially those in the United States and Britain. And the EPR, that is Mexico's Popular Revolutionary Army, says it can play a key role in allowing Al-Qaeda operatives to enter the United States through the busiest land crossing in the world, Tijuana. Now, they catch a lot of smugglers and illegals at Tijuana, but there's many more that get through. Another document reveals that along Peru's border with Chile, a large Arab community is providing substantial sums of money for Al-Qaeda, and the documents discovered in Pakistan have become a prime concern of MI6. Given Britain's substantial holdings in Latin America, this could be seriously damaged by what one MI officer calls Chavez and his rogue gallery of sinister wannabes and corrupt opportunists. MI6 says that Venezuela is now one of the main conduits of trafficking drugs into Europe, and Al-Qaeda is a major player. So don't be the least bit surprised if they're not already here. Both MI6 and the Mossad, which is the Jewish Secret Service, believe Al-Zawahiri made several visits to Latin America during the last decade. We've heard of his name a number of times. And before the U.S. coalition attack on Iraq, the U.S. State Department offered congressional testimony that both Al-Qaeda and Shiite terror groups, Hezbollah, were taking a firm hold in America's backyard, Mexico. In 2003, G2 Bulletin reported that in the Paraguayan capital, in Asunción, reported the arrival of a growing number of visitors carrying European passports, but undoubtedly appearing to be more Middle Eastern than anything else. See, what they do is they go over to Europe and they're accepted there, then they get a passport there, and then they come over here with European passports. They wouldn't be even allowed in here if they had a passport from a number of these Arab countries. There's very little doubt. Most of these visitors went on to find their way to the triple border region of Argentina, Brazil, and Paraguay. And the region, often described as a lawless area, is named the Muslim Triangle. That's how much activity is going on down in South America. And the Argentinian Intelligence Service assessment says the jihadi pendulum is tilting more and more towards South America. And there's widespread corruption in South America. And as World Net Daily reported, a Venezuelan military defector claims Venezuela's Chavez developed ties to the terrorist groups such as Al-Qaeda, even providing it with $1 million in cash after 9/11. That's right. All of a sudden we have this antagonism developing in South America, don't we? This is what illegal immigration is bringing. Look what it's doing to our country. It certainly is a curse. Now, the last one I'm going to cover, I'm going to take a little more time today. Homosexuality. Now, here's California. Every time I look at California, I have to think, did anything good ever come out of that state? Because if you heard the latest law they just passed down there, I'll read it to you in a few minutes. But let's notice what we read here. I used to read this years ago, and it didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. It's making a whole lot more sense today, because you know what they call San Francisco today? Sodom of the West. There are more homosexuals in San Francisco than any other city in the nation. I'm beginning to believe the whole thing is run by homosexuals. Or at least there are people who are very sympathetic toward them. Here we read in Isaiah 1 verse 10, "Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of our God, you people of Gomorrah. Yeah, that's what we have going on. You read back in Deuteronomy 32. Deuteronomy 32 and verse number 20, 32:20. I will hide my face from them, and I will see what their end will be, for they are a perverse generation. Does that perversity include homosexuality? Verses 28, 29, and 30. Verse 28, they are a nation void of understanding, of counsel, neither is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, and that they would consider their latter end. So you see, what do we read in 2 Timothy 3, verse 3? I won't turn to it. I'll just quote it to you. What is one of the characteristics there? Without natural affection. Yeah. When they're homosexuals or they're lesbians, it is not natural affection. It's perverse and it's contrary to God's law. Jeremiah 23, verses 13 and 14. I have seen the folly in the prophets of Samaria. Well, we see it today too, don't we? We have whole churches now opening their arms wide open and accepting homosexuality, ordaining homosexual priests or clergy. In fact, the Episcopalian churches is practically split wide open over this issue. Oh, they're so tolerant. And they have the idea that why Jesus was had his arms wide open to everybody. Well, I can tell you what he did. He had them wide open when you repented. He's not going to accept you coming in with your perversions and everything that's contrary to what he brought to this world. They prophesied in Baal and they caused my people to err. I've seen a horrible thing in the prophets of Jerusalem. They commit adultery and walk in lies, and they strengthen the hand of evildoers so that no one turns back from his wickedness. All of them are like Sodom to me, and her inhabitants like Gomorrah. Yeah. Pretty well describes what's going on, doesn't it? Revelation 22. We find this going on right at the very time of the end. And what do we read here? We read in verse number 14, blessed are those who do his commandments, that they may have a right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates of the city. But outside are dogs. Now, every single source will tell you that that is a euphemism for sodomites because of the way dogs act when they're in heat. Dogs, referring to sodomites and sorcerers and sexually immoral, murderers and idolaters, and whoever loves and practices a lie. Now, let's notice some examples of what I'm talking about. Here's California. The California State Assembly today, and this was May 11, passed a bill that removes sex-specific terms such as mom and dad from textbooks and requires students to learn about the contribution homosexuals have made in society. Now, if you lived in California, would you allow your child to go to a public school? Here's what the problem is. If California sets that trend, the trend is either set in two parts of the nation, either California or New York. What happens if the rest of the nation is now going to begin to follow this? A generation from now, what are all your children going to be like? How rampant is going to be homosexuality? The bill, approved 22 to 15, would have prevented textbooks, teaching materials, instruction, and school-sponsored activities from reflecting adversely on anyone based on sexual orientation, actual or perceived. Responding to the argument of the bill's defenders, Randy Thomason, president of Campaign for Children and Families, charged it isn't about safety or discrimination. It's about leading children into sexual confusion and destroying their respect for the natural family. England said, this is another speaker, Karen England, of the Capital Resource Institute. She said school districts would also like to do away with dress codes and accommodate transsexuals on girls-specific or boys-specific sports teams. And sponsored by Democrat Senator Sheila Kuehl, K-U-E-H-L, a lesbian actress best known for playing Zelda in The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis in the 60s, which I never saw. The legislation would add gender, actual or perceived, sexual orientation to the law that prohibits California public schools from having textbooks, teaching materials, instruction, or school-sponsored activities that reflect adversely upon peoples based on characteristics like race, creed, and handicap. She's the one that sponsored the bill. Yeah, it'd have to be a lesbian that would sponsor it, wouldn't it? Why do the rest of these people just roll over? She explained teaching materials mostly contain negative or adverse views of us. And that's when they mention us at all, that is, if they do. In textbooks, it's as if there are no gay people in California at all. And so she wants to see that the gays get their notification. And here's another comment on it. A bill requiring students to learn about contributions homosexuals have made to society is making progress in California. The state's Judiciary Committee approved it, which would mandate grades 1 through 12 buy books accurately portraying the sexual diversity of our society. How many millions of dollars is this going to cost now in, quote, new textbooks? You want your child to go to a school where you're told now that homosexuals and lesbians are perfectly acceptable in society? I tell you, if this isn't going to precipitate a lot more homeschooling, that whole educational system is corrupt anyway from top to bottom. And it says here it would require history lessons on the contributions of people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender to the economy, economic, political, and social development of California and the United States. Now, they got something going around now, if you heard of it. Abraham Lincoln was a homosexual. Whew. I mean, there's no end to this madness. And under SB 1437, school districts would be prohibited from having a prom king or queen because that would show bias of gender and sexual orientation. So that's another example. Now, gays, marriage, future lies with .net youngsters. What's that mean? As the gray heads in the United States Senate get ready to weigh in this June on gay marriage, look elsewhere if you want to see the real deciders. Look at the 21-year-old getting ready to enter law school, the 7-year-old ripping on a Razor scooter, and a 2-year-old doing her first spin around the program. Their generation will, I predict, have the final say over full marriage equality for those of us who are gay. And they'll give it an enthusiastic thumbs up. Brainwashing the whole next generation. That's what's going on down there in California. Did anything good ever come out of California? Even 2-year-olds, 15, 25-year-olds favored gay marriage, and this is just recent, by 56% to 39%, according to a national survey on the University of Maryland's. That is, 2 years ago, the 15 to 25-year-old group approved it. And each generation has come of age being considerably more tolerant. Perhaps within 10 years, gay marriage will enjoy majority support nationwide because younger, more accepting voters will be replaced today's 65-plus voters. That's the name of the game, folks. This is the real world I'm talking about. Now, Representative Deborah Maggart, Republican, Hendersonville, Tennessee, she had correspondence with a student that had a master's degree at Vanderbilt. And I used to drive by Vanderbilt a number of times when we lived in Tennessee, and I saw a fellow out there one time. He had cut off blue jeans about close to being short shorts, and he had a kind of a wild colored shirt and a crazy looking tie that went along with it, and he had a beard, then you should have seen what the students looked like. This guy was a professor. That's Vanderbilt. Anyway, she says, we have seen evidence that homosexual couples prey on young males and have in some instances adopted them in order to have unfettered access to and subject them to a life of molestation and sexual abuse. Now you hear these states, they're proving that these homosexuals can adopt children, don't you? How much worse is it going to get? How much further is God going to let it go? The gay adoption bill is in the House. This is in Tennessee. Committee. It's in a committee on children and family affairs and has several more steps before lawmakers can take a vote. Let's hope that that's cast out. I hope those Tennesseans have enough sense to avoid that thing. So that gives you a pretty good example of what we have going on in the world today. This is the real world. Now, two questions. How does this affect you? And all you people out there on the phone lines, how does this affect you? Well, I'll show you how it ought to affect you. Notice 2 Peter 2, verses 6 and 7. Here we read that God did not spare the ancient world, but he saved Noah. And then we read in verse 6, he turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemning them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly. And delivered righteous Lot, who was vexed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. That ought to affect you? That's the way it should. And the second thing I want to point out, in bringing this to a close, you'd better remember what Jesus said. You'd better pray always that you're going to be worthy to escape all these things that are going to come and to stand before the Son of Man.